Hey guys, it's Francis here. How are you? And this is the Reset Phoenix. And I'm speaking to you from Simonstown in beautiful Cape Town, South Africa. And I'm going to talk to you about currency, fiat currency, the paper, the faith-based system. I'm going to do an interesting example that's been driven home during this trip. So I'm sitting looking out over some Chinese trawlers. First time docked in Simonstown. In fact, some Chinese military ships, and there were trawlers apparently behind them doing a bit of fishing in our waters. I'm afraid to say, I think our current president here in South Africa, Zuma, is very well owned by China in terms of support. But anyway, that's not quite the point I want to talk to you about today. I want to talk about currency. And one of the clear things that is very clear to me, having moved around a bit, is when I left South Africa and I spent the first 32 years of my life here, both as a child, born in Cape Town itself, 12,500 rand a month was a decent salary. In other words, you would have what I'd call a middle class type, for those of you who understand that kind of explanation, type living standard. You would have a home, you would pay a bond or a mortgage on that, and you'd probably pay one or two cars on HP with car insurance and still have a bit left over for your one or two holidays a year. And probably still have a little bit put away at the end of each month as well. And that was about the salary when I left in, that was, you know, a target salary. Through 10,000, a little bit more than 10,000, 12,500, and you'd be tickety-boo. And a decent income. And you'll be living a pretty happy life in an idyllic country. Now, I've come back, and it is 2016. It is 17 years since departure. And I can tell you, to have that same lifestyle, having spoken to many of my family, friends, and I've spoken to many of them that are around here, the ideal monthly salary that you require is 100,000 rand. That's right, 100,000 rand. And that is about eight times what it was when I departed some 17 years ago. So in the space of 17 years, the currency, or to have the same standard of living, now requires eight times the amount of money. Most houses of any value are millions, where previously you could buy for hundreds of thousands. I took a domestic flight, and this was not 17 years ago. I took a domestic flight from Johannesburg to Cape Town for 306 rand about 7 years ago. And today the same flight costs over 2,000. And all that's happened here is that, and you might be saying, well, why do I care about South Africa? You were born there. You want to talk about it. I don't care. I don't live here. I might go to holiday there and may never go there. Well, if I'm holding the notes that I've got right here in my hand, I've got the old school 100 rand notes that I recognize. And then I see a whole new strand, smaller, cheaper, different artwork of 100 rand note. And that used to be the biggest note. But then there was the leopard, which was the 200 rand note, which is the biggest denomination. And there's two versions of that. In fact, when I look at the currency, there's two versions of everything. There's clearly a much bigger increase in the proliferation. Both the old notes are out there and further notes have been issued, particularly of the bigger denominations. In other words, I have a wallet full of 100 rand notes, where previously that used to be a fairly sizable sum. It's rather disappointing to see how little it actually buys. And this is fiat currency, and this is being proliferated. Now remember, notes make up a very small percentage of the total money in circulation. So just looking at a tip of the iceberg, a proxy, a small percentage proxy of the money in circulation, we have a massive increase in the number of 100 rand and 200 rand notes, which are the two largest denominations. And it needs to be that way for what things cost. But which comes first? The proliferation of the notes come first. But in actual fact, the thing driving the proliferation of the notes, which is just a small percentage of the overall pie wedge, is the proliferation of money in the system, electronic money. Electronic money is the largest. Those are those ticks in your account that tick up. Now, also when I left way back when, the stock market was in and around just getting into the double figures. It was kind of like the FTSE level, the JSE all share. It was sort of 7,000-8,000 index. Now it's a 45,000 index, mainly because the currency's devaluation, not because it's had a massive boom. In fact, South Africa has teetered on a form of recession, or been in recession, for most of its time that I've been away. So this is really, really interesting. They've had higher interest rates to try to keep flight capital from withdrawing from the country, given what's perceived as a high political risk. Now, you say, well, that's interesting. That's all very interesting. Now I know a little bit more about what's going on in South Africa. There's too much money going around. Well, what's actually happening is South Africa is a microcosm of us, of our global economy. I just notice it more because I've stepped out and I've stepped back in. To a lesser degree, I see this in the pound sterling that I carry in my wallet. Just the rate is probably slightly less precipitous in the dollars and in the cost of things, how they keep continually moving up. In other words, the game is proliferation of liquidity drags us all into higher tax brackets because everything costs more. Even your salary goes up without your wealth going up. So if your salary goes up proportionately, which in many cases it hasn't even done, but in some cases it may do, your overall standard of living actually feels more pinched, even though the numbers that you get in are bigger, because things cost more. There's new costs, toll road charges, parking goes up, everything goes up, things that you never had. Here in South Africa, roads that have been excellent and have existed for many, many years now have major toll road charges on them. I've just driven from the Drakensberg, not from Durban, all the way to back to Johannesburg, and we passed through six toll roads, each one taking their swipe on a journey that used to cost nothing. And had we come from Durban, we would have had two or three more. So this is an incredible development. So that money is not for the original work of the roads, that was paid out of previous taxpayers' money and was built. So just the maintenance of the road, and it's just revenue accrual. There's more taxation, there's more inflation, there's more bracket creep. Just for standing still and having to go up proportionately along with everything else, we are being dragged ever higher. So that is why you have a consumer that is squeezed. And this is the game. This is the game of governments. This is the game of controlling the money supply. The big game of controlling the money supply is the people who will control the real power, not your government. The people that control your money supply and the people that can coordinate controlling the money supply across all the first world nations can squeeze the third world nations, as we've had on the emerging markets with Brazil, India, India less so, but South Africa, Mexico, Turkey. Massive devaluations that causes an immense amount of stability in those countries. So it's political power in the first world over the emerging markets. And the rating agencies. South Africa's being put on a ratings watch. Got quite an irresponsible president who spent the better part of $260 million on his security for his own personal home, Rand that is, just on the security aspects, and suddenly family member dwellings also pop up on the same huge part of the land that he's carved out for himself. So the suspicions are invoices have been played with nicely. So there's a lot of reason why a rating agency may well be justified in assuming corruption. And what that means is if you're on standby for a downgrade, and in some instances that would be from out of investment grade to junk grade, more hardship will come. And that'll lead to greater cost for the debt, which is in dollar basis. Now, at the moment, I have a slight suspicion that there is going to need to be an interest rate hike out of the Americans. They promised two. They started the year saying four and being bullish on that four, which we could never understand, to now guiding on two, of which one they've done. Now, their election year, and this is the end of it, double-year election cycle with Obama at an eight-year presidency, has brought them to the brink of a key decision being made around November of this year. So a rate hike just into the teeth of that election in September is not likely, because it would be very much against the current political party, which is Democrats at the moment. It will cause hardship and resentment towards that particular party. So it would be seen as partisan, or in other words, not favouring one particular group. Doing so in December, into the teeth of a December retail season, a Christmas season, where many companies specifically rely on a massive part of their sales into Christmas, would be an absolute economic no-no by most virtues. So that leaves us literally with it needing to be done mid-year or not at all. So the likelihood of that rate hike is significant. So we could get the dollar strength that I've been suggesting as could come a while, and we could get that euro slip that I've been suggesting may come a while for those that follow my trading posts and YouTubes. What would that mean? That would mean emerging markets back in trouble again. And I'm sitting in one of them right now. But it wouldn't be exclusive to South Africa. But when you throw in all the reasons to be cautious on South Africa, the downgrades, etc., the bad governments, it might be one of the prime shorts to trade. But I expect it to be similar for the Turkish lira, peso, real, with their presidential woes. So there's going to be a potential resurgence of the emerging market push if we were to get that, particularly if we were to get that interest rate hike mid-year or at the next major Fed meeting. So that's one to watch. And what will that mean? The debt gets more expensive, regardless of whether you get a downgrade or not on your rating of your country. Debt's going to get more expensive regardless if America ups rates. So that's going to squeeze all emerging markets, including good performing ones. If you then get a downgrade as well, well, that's going to be a double whammy. And this could send this particular currency into free fall again. So South African rand is 22, give or take, depending on the moment you check, against pound. And I think it's better part of 16, 17 versus the dollar. So we could get through 20 on the dollar and through 25 again on the pound on that news. But what does this tell us all? Well, actually, it's just a microcosm. It's one of the worser cases at the moment, but it is a microcosm. This currency, this floating of currency, this cost of living, it's just an accelerated version of what's going on globally. It's the big game. The proliferation of liquidity causes a boom that later causes a bust that leads to over-indebtedness, an overhang of indebtedness, not allowing things to be tidied up properly, leads to a lot of zombie institutions that are technically paralyzed but weren't killed off, such as the calls we made on Deutsche Bank and Barclays and many things that weren't properly cleaned up in 2008. And what do we have? We have proliferation of paper currency, immense amount of versions of high denomination notes, and eventually, as we saw on the euro, where the 500 euro note was deemed too large, they're going to claw back that element that is in the paper. So it's going to be even less evident in the paper, and the paper is going to become an even smaller slice of the total amount of currency in circulation. So there's a war on cash as well. But the cash that, while we still have it, is giving away massive clues, particularly if you're away and you step back and you see what's going on. I look at this paper, it even feels like it's made of lesser quality than the previous ones. It feels small, it's smaller, and less of substance and consequence. But then that's just a perception. The original money was no more powerful, but they were perceived as big notes at the time. Now, you get the feeling that this is low cost and it's much higher level of proliferation. And if that's just happening on that 6-7%, which is the mean average that is paper currency, imagine how much is being proliferated in digits in the bank accounts. Imagine how big that we are, and remember, banks and the central banks control the proliferation of digits in the banking system. In other words, if they issue loans to people for borrowing or buying, What tends to happen is that new money is being created. And when you have irresponsible leaders in power, and we've had three finance ministers in the last 4 months. We had a very good one who was fired. He was replaced by a very poor selection, who was immediate, lasted 2 days. Then we had a third put in, and now he's under possible sanction or arrest. So it is turning a little bit into a comedy show, a tragic comedy show here. But have no illusion. Wherever you are in the world listening to this, you are at varying degrees of these forces that are being driven upon us. A war on cash, a proliferation of money and liquidity that is through a central bank, and a natural attempt to devalue that which you have in your wallet. And this just makes the case for long-run eventual fiat failure. In other words, the accumulation of debt, when you create money, you actually are creating a simultaneous debt. And this is what people forget. You can't just create money. It's the T accounting system, a liability and an asset. The minute you create a deposit, you also create a liability. And a liability requires an usury interest premium. That is the usury extractor's game, the central bank. That's how they get to live off you without working. They create something, they have been given the power to create something, that means they afford you a business opportunity, it has a price associated to it, and they can live off that which they've created out of thin air on the basis that you have to pay them an existence for access to that money. This is the great fraud. The privilege we give to the people that are allowed to be your money creators. And this is why Rothschild said, I care not who is government of the day or king of the day, as long as I control the money supply. And that is the absolute and ultimate power, right there. The ability to create booms and busts by proliferation of liquidity through a banking system that you control, through central banks, through commercial banks, to the man in the street. And that's what gave us our 2008 bust after a massive boom. And that overhang was never cleared. And in fact, we should have probably taken a depression after the dot-com, a proper depression after the dot-com. We should have definitely gone into, and we have done, a full-blown depression in 2008, because this is the first globalized version of complete bank bustness that has not been allowed to acknowledge and has been totally socialized on us all. So you know all this, and that's why you're listening to it. But where does that leave us for now? In a sense, essentially, in a zombie global economy. And what do you do if you're stuck in a zombie global economy and growth is tight and hard to attain? And everything creeps up in cost, although the inflation number never seems to move very much. You have to plan for it. You have to invest differently. You have to live within your means. You have to make a net saving. And what you do with that saving has to be powerful. And it has to be in the one money that never, ever dies. Can't be printed, can't be proliferated, and is rarely extracted at any rate more than 2 or 3% in any given year. So silver had a marginal increase of around just over the twos in global production. After many years of constriction, gold is usually in and around between 1 and 2%, but is more consistently less upside. Silver mines are very, very rare now. Pure 100% silver plays. In other words, the silver supply is relied on gold mines, copper mines, as a byproduct, a secondary extraction. And you've got to remember that solar panels, this device I'm talking to record this, everything we touch is making use of silver. Anything electronic has a large amount of silver in it. And the supplies above ground are at ever, ever lower levels. And getting good data on that, where before there were about 9 billion ounces, all we know is that we're roughly somewhere below the 1 billion mark by some way. And the solar's going crazy. There's huge amounts of solar now being put up. There's huge amounts being utilized in Elon Musk's products that are all batteries, power generators, solar, and his vehicles, to name just a few. So it's gold and silver time. It's gold and silver time, and you need it physical, and you need it on you. And that message isn't changing. I mean, how many times you listen to various podcasts, the theme might be different. I might be talking from a different country. I might be saying some of the same things about the proliferation of liquidity. But the end game solution means you need to have a position in real, real money. And that is physical bars, coins, of both gold and silver. And depending on the amount of money you have and how much storage space you have, you might have to vary the percentage. But in the long run, I think silver will have the higher beta, which will mean if we are right and there's upside, it will have by far the higher percentage move relative to gold. But having a mix of both is good. If you've got substantial money and you've got limited storage space, and I do believe that this should be under your personal control, not under some... not under the control of some holding company or safety deposit box company in case of the extremist events, and then you'll be fine. And you will probably buy properties with your gold and silver after the bank bust. And I think there's going to be a move towards a globalized currency, a global currency. And the central banks will be chastised for failing and causing major drama in maybe a post-Third World War environment, which sounds a bit grim, I know, but let's hope there's no conflict. But there certainly should be, there's certainly a reset coming, and that's the big theme behind this podcast. What is your plan for the reset that's on its way? What are you going to do, and how much actually have you done? You may have had... Yes, I intend to do something, but the wheels of contagion can move exceedingly fast. You could go to thinking, well, I've got money, I'm stacking some money, and I'll suddenly move it out of the bank, and I'll buy my position just before everything goes wrong. I'm afraid that's inadequate and unlikely. Things could move very, very quickly. They control the news flow, and you know the Euro-Swiss franc floor failure that we call... caught most people by complete surprise. It was right after a complete denial of any intention to do exactly that in December, and by January it was done. And they don't feel the need to answer to you why they misled you. And it took $500 million out of the top 7 UK brokers. So do not expect to get wind of the moment that this may occur. For some crazy reason, I'm getting the 28th of May popping up on all my YouTube clips. It's almost as if Google and YouTube are trying to misinform me for a big market crash. It's going to be interesting. I'll have to check what's happening on there. I don't know if it's a Fed meeting day or what, but I have a deep sense of dis-ease about what's to come over the summer. And you need to have begun. And you do. This is not a trade. This is an investment strategy. So it doesn't matter what price you get today, because you're going to keep buying every month. You're going to be in an averaged out entry point. And I suggest you set a mark to purchase every single month silver or gold physically delivered to you, where you put it in a safe place. And you put that mark and you stand by it. And don't worry about what you pay in any given month. Because if what happens, happens, we're talking about a multiple, possibly 5, 10, and even 20 and beyond, that you will get, that will see you as one of the few people actually preserving purchasing power in an environment where so much can be lost. Anyway, that's all. It's a 24-minute chat with you guys, going for 25 minutes, and I just want to make the case. When you travel, when you see slightly more extreme versions of where you currently are in the first world, you actually realize the game is actually the same, just the pace varies slightly. Proliferation of liquidity, proliferation of digitization of money, giving all the power to the banks, all the control to the tax and the control to the government and over your wealth, and the ability to bail banks in, etc., versus less and less offline wealth, war on cash. And if you're in one of these high acceleration areas like South Africa, proliferation of the higher value notes, even though their value is divided by 8, going on 10. So make your plans, start your move, and be prepared. That's all from me, Francis Hunt. Look forward to catching up with you. We will, as usual, service resume with our guests, Zach Meyer and Mike Ingram. So stay tuned for that. Subscribe, follow, share, and rate. And keep asking yourself, how prepared am I if tomorrow was the day of the great reset phoenix?